Morning, today's Daf Nerchin is Chav Dalet. Thank the Skashel family for sponsorship of the Daf this week. The learning is going to be Le'ilui Nishmas David Ben Yosef. The Mishnah is going to wrap up our parak. We have a couple more Mishnahs to go in this parak. We are in the very bottom of the Amud Alpha Pishamur Chayvei Erchim and Mashkin Oso. This is a pick up from the previous parak. These parakim are very short. The as I mentioned, 9 prakim stuffed into 33 blotted gemara, so the prakim are going to be short. If you look back at the previous parak, so we talked about memashkin. Somebody is a little bit belligerent in terms of paying up his debts, so he's going to get a knock on the door. The gizbar of the beis din is going to come in, and they're going to start taking collateral. And so that already was established in the previous parak. And so what we're doing is basically picking up on that discussion. In terms of what exactly is going to be done, is going to be taken from him. You look back on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, so Chayvei Erechim Memashkin Oso. So when someone is Chayv an Erech obligation, so and he's clearly he's being slow on his feet, so he just simply they come in and they start taking collateral, and so obviously they're going to be taking to incentivize them and motivate them to pay. And the question that our Mishnah now is going to pick up is, what are they going to be taking? Are they going to be taking everything? Now, obviously, they're not going to exceed that which you owe. That part is, I think, pretty clear and obvious. But still, let's say what you owe is considerable amount. And is there going to be anything protected from seizure? And so we are now learning that topic in our Mishnah. So you're going to be given enough food for 30 days, either food or money for the food for 30 days. But in other words, you're given a 30-day allowance. Now, in terms of clothing, so you're going to have 12 months of clothing. And you'll also be left with a bed and with shoes. And also your tefillin are going to be protected from seizure. However, this is not going to be true regarding the provisions for your family. Now, obviously, that sounds a little bit on the harsh side, meaning that you and your assets are, not your assets, but you and your daily needs are going to be protected from seizure. But meanwhile, the food of your the food of your children and your wife are not going to be protected from seizure. So obviously, that's a little bit rough. But if we just looked at it from a strictly legal standpoint, meaning you did make an obligation, you do owe the money, you do have an obligation to feed your family, but at the very same time, so you have these competing obligations, one with another, and so it's tough. Imaya umenos and loshte clay umnos mikomin v'min. Now, if you are some sort of craftsman, and so obviously working for you is going to be able to put food on your table. So what they're going to leave you also, what is also going to be protected from seizure, is going to be tools. And what you're going to be allowed is a set of one pair of tools for each one of the tools that you own. So in other words, the primary one that you use and also the spare as well. If you are a carpenter, so you're going to be left with two hatchets, shnei mageros, and two saws. And again, the Mishnah over here is not highlighting, these are the totality of tools that you have. The Mishnah is just giving examples. Here are some of the tools of the trade. So you'll be allowed to be protected and kept two of those tools, but no more than two of those tools. Let's say the guy had five hammers and they were all the same. They just had four spares. So then three of them are going to be taken as seizure and two are going to be kept by him. And that's the basic idea. Rebbe Elazar Omer Imhaya Ikar Nosen Lo Simdo. Chamar Nosen Lo Chamaro. Rebbe Eliezer now goes off on a limb in terms of what also is going to be protected, and that is your animals. If you're a farmer, so your oxen are going to be protected. The oxen are pulling the plow. If you are a delivery man, a chamar, so then you are given your donkey. Hayilo min meruba. Now, I say that he's going out in a limb over here. It doesn't sound like such a revolutionary idea that a farmer is able to keep his cows and the delivery man is able to keep his donkey. It sounds pretty reasonable. But as we will see, there's going to be pushback on this idea of Rabbi Eliezer. And we will discuss why that should be. Let's say the following. Let's say he does have tools of his trade. He happens to have, I'm just throwing this out as an example, he has three hammers and he's got one screwdriver. Okay? Now, Ein Omer Limkor Samruba Likach Menamuat. Now, as far as he only has one screwdriver, but he's allowed to have two in terms of protection from seizure. but he only has one screwdriver. But he has three hammers. So maybe he can make the following argument. Look, don't take all three of my hammers. Meaning, don't take one of the three, which I know you're entitled to do. Rather, here's what we'll do. Let's just call it a day. Meaning, I only have one screwdriver, so like I kind of get credited with the second screwdriver. So how about this? Take my credit and just simply apply it to the hammer so that I can have three hammers. Okay? So, Elanosin lo shnei minam minam ruba v'choshiyesh lo minamot v'choshiyesh lo minamot. But rather, the Mishnah says as follows. No. In other words, in terms of seizure, if this person has an obligation and we're seizing property, so you're going to be taking everything up to two. So in other words, you'll take his third hammer. And as far as the fact that he has one screwdriver, okay, he has one screwdriver. Hamakdish chasim man lo tefillin. Now, somebody who's makdish is nechasim, so what we're going to do is we're going to assess the tefillin in terms of its value so that he could redeem it. Meaning, as the Gemara is going to be very clear about this, when a person is makdish his nechasim, it includes all of his assets and all of his possessions, including his tefillin. And so therefore, if he wants his tefillin back, he's going to have to pay for it.
How can he pay for it if he gives everything away?
That's a great question. He's going to have to find some money. So the
account receivable is considered part of it? I mean, like,
no.
can he count on account receivable that he could buy it back?
Whatever. There'll be a way for him to...
Everything away. Account receivable included?
I understand the question. I don't know. My guess would be no, but I'm not sure.
Is it the value of a stumped film or that particular film that he...
No, I assume it's his film. In other words, his filling now belongs to Hakdish, and now he wants to redeem it, so he's going to have to pay.
But I'm saying, are they going to like assess the filling individually, or are they going to say like, yeah, this each filling standard should be $300?
I don't know.
How could he have them give away the mitzvah that he's supposed to do every day? The Gemara is going to ask a question.
Okay. V'imachum erkecha. So we start off with the following. So we are talking now about what is getting protected from seizure. So the Mishnah gives a list. It's not an exhaustive list. It's a pretty conservative list in terms of what gets to be protected from seizure. And the Mishnah wants to know why. Why do we protect him from any kind of seizure? Meaning if he owes an obligation, so he is now obligated financially. He clearly has been delaying. And so over here, so granted, it is difficult to hear all this, but the fact of the matter is that he owes the money. And so therefore, why is anything protected from seizure? So the Gemara says, V'imachu me'erkecha. And the Gemara, as Rashi points out over here, is darshing the word who. Hecheyehu me'erkecha. Look at the top Rashi. Darshinan hecheyehu. Dehachi mashma hu. Yiyekayim me'erkecha. We want him to still have a who. We want him to have some sort of essence. And if he's not going to be protected at all from seizure, and you take everything away from him, so we no longer have the who. We no longer have him as a person. And so therefore, what we want to do is we want to give him some sort of way to sustain himself. So in terms of all the assets of his wife, the clothing, the food, why are they not protected from seizure? Because the pasuk says the word who. It's only him that gets protection from seizure, but not his family. And so, as I mentioned back in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar says the farmer gets to keep the oxen. And the donkey driver gets to keep his donkey. And now the Gemara points out there has to be a debate because the Tanakhama clearly does not side with that. And what we have over here is really a debate in accounting. So it's interesting. It's an accounting debate. Meaning that what is protected from seizure? What's protected from seizure is things that are clay umnus, tools of the trade. So in other words, so if we can line item all the things that he has, that he owns, so anything that falls under the category of tools of the trade, so that gets protected from seizure. And even that, by the way, only a pair of each of the tools gets protected from seizure. Everything else is subject to seizure. However, when we get to now the animals, so animals, according to the Tanakhama, do not fall under the category of tools of the trade. Rather, they're assets. It's nechasim. And so therefore, even though, in terms of a line item, so you could say, look, I need the oxen, meaning how else am I pushing the plow? I need the donkey. How else am I delivering? So those are strong arguments. On the other hand, categorically, they fall into the category of nechasim, not kli umnos. And the protection and protection from seizure is only going on kli umnos and not on nechasim. And so, quite frankly, according to the chachamim, puts him in a really tough spot. Meaning he's a farmer without oxen. He's a donkey driver without a donkey. So it puts him in a really tough spot if they are not protected from seizure, which according to the Tanakhama, they're not protected from seizure. So I'm not really sure how that works, but understood, though, however, is the idea that They put it, they file it under a different category in terms of the accounting. Hayla min echad. So the Gemara says, now, the last part of the Mishnah, the Gemara is basically balking at the Chiddush. It's not a Chiddush. Meaning, he's got, like the example I gave back in the Mishnah, he had three hammers, he had one screwdriver. And what he's going to try to argue is that, well, you know I'm entitled to two of each, so why don't we call it a day? Don't take my third hammer, right? Let me keep my third hammer, and anyway, I'm only using one screwdriver. So let's see, you know, it averages out. So that was the, and to that the Mishnah says no. And the Gemara is basically saying, it's not a Chiddush. So the Gemara says, no, it is a Chiddush. Here's a really salient argument that you could have made. You could say like this. Look, he's got three hammers, he's got one screwdriver. You're right. I've been working with one screwdriver up until now. I really only need one. Good. I'm with you. However, here's how that third hammer benefits me. Because in the event that I ever need a spare, so I always have an extra hammer to lend out. And so, look, that third hammer for me, granted, I have my second hammer. I have my spare. But my third hammer does give me some sort of benefit because in the event that I need another tool or another whatever else I need, I'm always now in a position where I could lend out that third hammer in order to get a spare screwdriver. Now you're going to take the third hammer away from me? That's his argument. And the counter argument, I guess, is it's unfortunate, meaning you're only given a pair of tools. Right, the primary and the spare, and that's it. And so we're going to take away the third hammer. Your argument of you only have one screwdriver. Look, you've been working with one up until now. Okay, you continue to work with one. Hamakdish nechasim malan lo tefillin. Okay, the person who's makdish nechasim, so the tefillin come along with it, and so therefore the tefillin is going to get assessed so that you can buy it back. How gavra does avnil lenichsei? A person sold all of his possessions. Once again, every now and then you're going to find this here in Erchin. Person is done with his worldly possessions. That's it. I'm living on the grace of God. So Ashulakame, the Rav Yemar, Amar Lahu, Slikalu Tfilin. So they go to Rav Yemar, and Rav Yemar says, okay, let's go assess the tfilin. So my Kamash Malam Masisan here, Makdish Nechasim Malo Tfilin. So the Gemara says Rav Yemar offered a psak, which is the correct psak, but what the Gemara is bothered by is Rav Yemar saying it as if this is such a novel idea. The Mishnah Nerechin. We now have the Mishnah Erech in front of us. A person is Makdish Nechasim, so that means that the tefillin go along right with it. And now Rav Yemar is saying it as if, oh, I have such a, what a Neinfeld, what a Chiddush. It's not a Chiddush, it's a Mishnah. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why what Rav Yemar is saying still represents a Chiddush. Ma'u detei ma'asim hu desavar mitzvah ka'avidna. So as far as a person who's Makdish Nechasim, and Hedy, this is getting to your point. So the person's Makdish Nechasim, so why is this tefillin coming along with his with all of his other possessions to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Because who's the recipient? The beneficiary over here is the Beis HaMikdash. Everything I gave to the Beis HaMikdash now represents a mitzvah. Of course, it's important for me to have my tefillin. Yes, it's important for me to have my tefillin. It's also, I'm doing the right thing in terms of giving my possessions over to the Beis HaMikdash. So one can imagine that when he's makdish nechasim and he doesn't withhold his tefillin, so the tefillin go as well because he's being makdish. He's doing something which is positive and productive. However, in our case that we're dealing with in the case study over here, a person sold his nechasim to another person. So it's not inherently good. In fact, for him now, he's going to be in financial straits, right? The Gemara never recommends a person sell all of his nechasim. The Gemara is just talking about the fallout, what happens when he does. So he's selling now all of his possessions. Now you can make the argument, you're selling all your possessions. Of course you want to keep your tefillin. I know you didn't articulate and say you're withholding your tefillin, but one could make the argument that you're withholding your tefillin because I don't want to give my tefillin up to somebody else, even though I wrote in the contract I'm selling all my possessions. So one can make the argument that he's not going to be selling his tefillin, and even though he didn't specify that he's keeping his tefillin with him, but you could make that argument. Okay, and the Gemara says, good, you can make that argument. Kamash Malan, what Rav Yemar is telling us is that it's not a valid argument. If you sell all your possessions, that's it. You lose all your possessions. And if you want your tefillin back, so appraise them and buy them back.
Didn't the Mishnah state that he gets to keep
the tefillin? The tefillin are protected from seizure. Mm-hmm. What the Mishnah taught us is that in the event that Beis Din's coming now and seizing property, so they're going to be protected from seizure. That is much different than a person giving over all of his possessions, not articulating that he wants to keep his tefillin. So now that he's giving over all his possessions, tefillin go along with it. Rav Yemar adds, not only if he's giving his possessions to Hekdesh, even if he's selling all of his possessions. Good. What we learned at the beginning of the Mishnah is that tefillin get protected from seizure.
How could you compromise one mitzvah or another mitzvah? Meaning that if he gives everything to Beit HaMikdash, then he was not going to be able to...
He shouldn't have done it. He shouldn't have done it.
How is he accepted that he...
Because he didn't. It's his possessions. You could do with it what you want with your possessions. You have the right. So a person who is makdish his nechasim, or he's marich himself, ain lo b'ksus ishto, v'lo b'ksus banav. This is a continuation of the previous Mishnah in terms of what gets taken from the gizbar. What is subject to seizure? So ain lo b'ksus ishto, v'lo b'ksus banav. So the clothing of his wife, the clothing of his children are not subject to the seizure. Now, if the clothing was dyed for their purpose, even though they haven't yet worn it, or new shoes that you already bought for them, even though they haven't used them yet, Okay, so at this point in time now, so the Mishnah is telling us that, in terms of what is subject to seizure, basically all your properties with notable exceptions, right, see the Mishnah in the beginning of today's year. Your family's clothing, shoes and such are not subject to seizure. Okay. Now, afa pisha amru avadim nimkarim b'ksusam l'shevach. New topic here in the Mishnah, even though we're in one Mishnah, but the Mishnah over here opens up a new topic. A new topic over here is regarding proper appraisal. Now, proper appraisal, afa pisha amru avadim nimkarim b'ksusam l'shevach. Let's say we have the following scenario. You have an estate, and right now we're going to have to sell off some of the estate. Now, we already talked about not so long ago the strong reservation a person should have when selling off any of the estate of an orphan. But under some circumstances, as we learned already a couple days ago, so you have to sell off some of the estate. So right now, so they're looking to sell off one of the avadim of the estate. And what happens if we dress the Eved in regular clothing versus if we dress the Eved up? What's going to happen is that there will be a positive profit in the sale of the Eved if we dress him up. Meaning that one can make the argument, well, if I buy a $200 suit, okay, you see where I'm holding. So if you buy a $200 suit and you put it on the Eved, so the Eved will fetch another $400 on the market, okay? In other words, he will generate a positive profit in terms of his own value. So if you invest a little bit of money, and so what the Mishnah is telling us is that that's true, and not only is that true, the apotropos is supposed to do that. In other words, obviously, when he's selling off estate, he wants to generate the greatest profit he could for the estate, and so therefore, yes, take money out, dress the Eved up so that he will fetch a higher price. Now, maybe you're wondering that this is somewhat disingenuous, meaning in the market, so shouldn't market value just be market value? And what are you doing now? You're dressing up the, in this case, the Eved Kanani. You're dressing it up so that you'll get more money, meaning isn't its market value something which is fixed? And so clearly, I mean, I'm just stating the obvious, clearly that's not true, meaning that when it comes to establishing market value is going to fluctuate. And if you make the item more presentable, and in this case, the person more presentable, so even though the market value now is going to go higher than the investment that you put in, it doesn't matter. Meaning that's still what is now the market value. So the apotropos is supposed to put in that investment. That's funny, I didn't have to throw out numbers. The Mishnah threw out numbers. So let's say, for example, you buy clothing at 30 dinar, and now he's going to go up a full money, 100. So in other words, that's 70. That's a 70 increase. Just by investing 30, you're going to have now jump up to 100. Good. That's what you're supposed to do. And the same thing with a cow. If we waited till market day, meaning we have to sell off a cow from the estate. And so right now, if we sell the cow, and now I'll throw out numbers, the Mishnah is not going to. So let's say we sell the cow now, it'll be $50. But if we wait till market day, and we sell it on market day, where there is a considerable number of potential buyers, so now the price is going to go up. So, right, demand is going to get higher. So, therefore, the price is going to go up. And so, therefore, that's what you should do. You should wait till market day, sell on market day, and obviously receive the greatest revenue for that cow. And the same thing is true regarding a gem or some sort of precious stone that you want to sell of the estate. And if you take it to the city, what we're going to do is we're going to fetch more money in the city. So, and granted, it's going to be an investment to carry to the city. But again, if the revenue is going to exceed that of the investment that you have to put in, so then by all means, that's what you have to do. The apotropos is obligated to do that. Meshubechati. So all this is true when selling off the estate of Yesomim. Make sure the apotropos is going to be receiving the greatest price for that, even if it means that we're going to have to invest money into it, as long as the price we're fetching is exceeding the investment. So then by all means, we're supposed to do that. And why are we talking about this now? Meaning, what does this have to do with Erchin? Because what the Mishnah is ready to do is contrast. And the Mishnah says, all this is true, but that's not true by Hekdesh. Ain lehekdesh ela mekama v'shato. You made an erich pledge. You now owe money. You're going to be given an assessment. So now Basin's coming and assessing. Oh, that Eved Kanan that you own, I know it's success. I know it could be sold at 30, could also be sold at 100 if we dressed them up. And that stone, I know it can go for 50, but if we go to town, it can be 100. And what Beis Din does when assessing your estate and your value is that they don't project. In other words, everything is going to be assessed at current prices, and that's a benefit to you, because now your financials are going to be significantly lower as long as you're looking at the present, and we're not projecting to how much it could sell for. Okay. So ein lehekdesh ela mekama v'shato. Tanu Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes the price of an asan ezerka chabayamahu. So you're going to be giving the erchin of that day. Shelo yishe margalis lekalim. And this is exactly the source of our halach and our mishnah, where what we do not do is that we do not take the stone and start projecting, well, it could be worth more if we don't do that. What we do is we assess it right now, even though it's going to come at a lower price, but that's good for you now because you are going to look financially in a more tight situation, which is better in terms of making a special assessment in terms of paying your erich pledge. And as long as we quoted the pasuk, as long as we quoted the drasha, kodesh Hashem stam ekdesh l'tzabed gabayis. So the end of the pasuk tells us that if I make a stam hekdesh, so the recipient is going to be bet gabayis. There could be other potential recipients, but if I do not specify, so it goes to bet gabayis. Okay, Adkan Hadron Alach, this is the end of Shum HaYesomim, and now we begin the seventh parak of the Masechta. Seventh and eighth parakim of the Masechta. We are now in the world of properties and Hekdesh. An introduction is necessary. I was in the right parak, I was in the wrong sefer. Okay. I thought I was so good and prepared. Okay. In Vayikra parak of Zion, so immediately after the parsha of Erchin, so the next parsha that comes along is the parsha of redemption of fields. The Torah says, "V'imis de'achuza, perich of Zion, pasuk Zion. V'imis de'achuza yakish ish la'Hashem. If a person is going to sanctify his ancestral field, really simple, just simply means he inherited it from his father." Now, in terms of its erech, in terms of its value, it's going to be lefi zaro. So, zerech omer saorim b'chamishim shekel kosef. What the Torah tells us is that when you're going to be redeeming it, you're going to be redeeming it at a fixed price. The fixed price is going to be 50 shkalim for a chomer of saorim. Chomer is a volume. That's 30 saw. It's also called a core. And so, the amount of field that's going to be able to net 30 saw of barley is going to be redeemed at 50 shkalim. A couple of things. First of all, in terms of the 30 core, so it comes out in terms of area as 75,000 square amas. Okay, good. In terms of the 50 shkalim, so the 50 shkalim is the maximum that you're going to be paying for that area. Now, when I say maximum, you're going to pay. So here's what we know. We know that we operate on the oval system. We know the oval system is 50 years, although everyone does not agree to that, which we're going to get to a little bit later this morning. And so the maximum that one could pay for it is going to be you're going to be maktishit in year one after Yovel, and so you're going to be having, including this year, 49 years until the next Yovel. So now we're taking 50 shkalim and we're dividing it by 49 years because the maximum you're going to pay is 50 shkalim. So if you were makdashit in year one after the Yovel, so you're paying 50 shkalim. And so now, if we're going to be prorating, so it's very simple. You take 50 shkalim and you divide it by 49 years. Now, 50 divided by 49 is not an even number. What it comes out to is a shekel per year and a pundayon. Now, just to explore this a little bit more, a pundayon, and what is a pundayon? Obviously, it's changed. 48 pundayon make one shekel. So if you figured it out already, you figured out that when you're...
48.
I'm saying 48. Okay. If you figured it out. So if you're now working the numbers in your head, so you figured out that when you're paying 50 shkalim, you're paying actually a little... When you're paying a shekel and a pundayon per year, so you end up paying a little bit more than 50 shkalim. Meaning 50 shkalim is the max, and we're prorating it to a shekel and a pundayon, so that means that by the end, you're going to be paying 49 shkalim and 49 pundayon, which is 50 shkalim and a pundayon. The Gemara notes this. We're not discussing it today, but the Gemara notes it anyway. That little extra change is purposeful. We'll discuss it on another occasion. In the meantime, however, so that's what it comes out. So that a stay achuza that you are makdish and you want to redeem, so you're going to be redeeming it at a fixed rate of one shekel and pundayon relative to the remaining years we have until Yovel. Period. It's really that simple. It's going to get a little bit more complicated, but in terms of how to redeem it, that's the story. Now, the Pesukim go on. Let's continue reading just a little bit more in the Pesukim. Now, if from the Yovel year you're a makdish it, so then it comes out to the assessed value as we just discussed, 50 shkalim. Now, if you're makdish it at any point after the first year, post Yovel, so then what you're going to figure out is the number of remaining years we have till Yovel, Ashnasa Yovel, Vinigra Me'er Kecha. And what you're going to do is deduct. Okay. Deduct what? Based on the prorated scale that we just described, where it's going to now be a shekel and pundayon per year. So figure out remaining years we have till Yovel, and you're going to be paying one shekel, one pundayon per year at this rate. Now, if you want to redeem at any point in time, so, and we're talking now about the owner wanting to redeem it, so he's going to have to add a surcharge of what the Torah describes as the fifth, but we all know better, we don't know better, we just know correctly, that the fifth that the Torah describes over here is really a fourth, it's really 25%. So you're going to be really adding 25% on top of the shekel and pundayon that you're paying. Now, if somebody else is going to be redeeming the field, so you now lose your opportunity to buy it back. We'll discuss more of this later in this parak, not today. Now, if you consecrate a field and you let it go without redemption until the Yovel year, here's what happens in the Yovel year. The Torah is very clear. The Torah says that this land now is going to be lost from you and your family permanently. It will go to the Kohanim. Which Kohanim? So as we're going to learn a little bit later in our perek, it's going to go to the Kohanim that are working in the Beit HaMikdash on the Mishmar, that Yom Kippur falls out. So whoever's working in the Beit HaMikdash, whichever Kohanim are going to be working in the Beit HaMikdash on that Yovel, so on that Yom Kippur of that Yovel, is going to be receiving the land. It's like Stei Cherem. Stei Cherem, which also going to be discussing later in this Masechta, is land that's consecrated to the Kohanim. This too is going to go to the Kohanim. Lakon tiyah chuzaso. Okay. And we'll pause over here in the Pesukim. The next Pesukim deal with the Stei Mikna, a field that you leased. But that's not our topic for today. So we can pause over here in the Pesukim. Those are really the necessary Pesukim that we need to know in order to really appreciate the beginning of the seventh Perek. And so let's begin.
As far as my income is, the last Mishmar is better.
Well,
that's the show of the year. You can get some.
Yeah. You're right. It's mazel. mazel goes a long way. Okay. Eim akdishin lifnei ayovel pachus mishei shana. So the first halacha of the Mishnah is that one is not to consecrate a field. And here we're talking about a stei achuza. One is not allowed to consecrate a field anything less than 2 years prior to Yovel. We're going to discuss and explain that a lot better. And one is not to redeem after the Yovel less than 1 year. Again, we're going to explain that a lot better, so stay tuned as we get to the Gemara. As far as months are concerned, months do not count. But sometimes the Beis HaMikdash can be Mechashiv Chadashim. Sometimes they can count months. Now, I know there were basically three halachas in the Mishnah, and I successfully explained none of the points in the Mishnah. But there is going to be discussion in the Gemara with every one of the points of the Mishnah, and we will have clarity on the Mishnah hopefully by the end of this morning. Now, if you look at the first statement of the Mishnah says, "Ein makdishin lifnei yovel pachos mishtei shanim," that one is not to consecrate a field anything less than 2 years before the yovel. Velo golin achar hayovel pachos mishana achas, and one is not allowed to redeem after the yovel anything less than 1 year. What just happened in the Mishnah? What did the Mishnah mean by that? And on top of that, the Gemara now is going to be quoting a braisa, which seems to contradict the Mishnah. Makdishin ben lifnei yovel ben lachar yovel. So the Braisa says that you could be Makdish a field whether you're before the Yovel year, whether you're after the Yovel year. And if you want to consecrate a field during the Yovel year, so you're not to do it, and if you do it, it's ineffective. Okay. This Braisa says that every year is eligible for you to consecrate your ancestral property, with notable exception to only the Yovel year itself. The year before, go for it. The year afterwards, go for it. Okay. And obviously, all the years in between, you may do so. Now, obviously, when you look at this braisa, you literally now cannot make heads and tails of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says that if you're within 2 years of Yovel, you can't be Matzah field. What is the Mishnah talking about? The braisa clearly allows that year to be a year of Hekdesh. So here now, we're going to start to get clarity on the Mishnah. Rav Shmuel Damer Tavayu Eim Makdish Ligal B'Giruah Pachos Mishnei Shanim. And so Rav and Shmuel say the following. As I read the Pesukim, so it became very clear that in terms of you redeeming your stay achuza that you were makdish, so it's going to be done on a prorated basis. If you were makdish it in year one after the Yovel, so that brings about the maximum that you're going to be paying at a rate of 50 shkalim per chomer sa'orim, kor chomer sa'orim. Okay. And any time I'm going to be being makdish it redeeming it at a later point in time, we're just going to figure out how many years are remaining between now and Yovel, and we're prorating based on that. Okay. And now here's what we're saying. Rav and Shmuel are saying it very clearly. This is true that we're going to go and redeem it at a prorated rate, but only up to and not including the years 2 and 1 before the Yovel. If you are in year 2, if you're 2 years before Yovel, if you're 1 year before Yovel, and you want to be Makdish and redeem the field within those years, you are no longer afforded Girua. You can redeem it, but not on a prorated basis. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's not prorated, so how much are you going to pay? The maximum of 50 shkalim. Huh? Yeah. And so, when Rav and Shmuel say that the correct way now to understand the Mishnah, ain Makdishim, the Mishnah is not saying don't do it because it's going to be ineffective. What the Mishnah really is saying is don't do it because you're going to be paying a lot of money. So in other words, that's good advice. One should not be makdish their field within 2 years of the Yovel year because you're not subject to Giruah. Now why are you? I'm sorry. Give me a moment. If you're not subject to Giruah? So it's really simple. Pshat and the Psukim. And the Pshat and the Psukim say. After Yovel, you're makdish. V'chishav lo hakohen es hakesef al pi hashanim hanosaros ashnas hayovel. So you need minimum of shanim nosaros until the Yovel v'nigra me'akecha. And then you're given giron, then you're given a deduction. Deduction over here means you get to pay on a prorated basis. But once you are now less than 2 years away from the Yovel, so you're within 2 years of the Yovel, so at that point in time, you're no longer subject to the Giron, and therefore you're going to have to pay maximum 50 shkalim.
So it's not a lot of money. It's only 2 years extra. Because if you're going to do it after the 2 years, it's going to be still 48 years left, 47 years left. But if you do it in the 2 years, it's only adding two more.
Let me try to say this as clearly as possible. Yeah. If you were makdish your land 3 years prior to the Yovel year, and you're going to redeem it.
No, I'm saying after the first 2 years, you said.
Before. And I'm talking about before the Yovel.
No, I'm talking.
I understand, but the Gemara is talking about before. Mm-hmm. Okay, so before the Yovel. Yeah. So if I was makdish land 3 years and now I'm going to be redeeming
that's a lot of money.
Okay, that's the point.
The first 2 years.
We're no. This is lifnei hayovel. Okay, ein magishin lifnei hayovel pachas mishtei shana. Okay, itmar. Okay, so right now we have been given a slight more clarity on the Mishnah. The first line of the Mishnah of Ein Makdishin Lefnei Hayovel Pachas Mishei Shanim is talking not about effectiveness, it's talking about advice. Good. Based on the halacha that we just learned. Itmar. Hamakdish Adeo B'Shnas Hayovel Atzma. Now, what if you're Makdish your field in the Yovel year itself? So again, you could be Makdish your field the year after Yovel. That's clear. And then if you're redeeming at that point in time, you're going to be paying maximum 50 shkalim. You could redeem. You can be Makdish your field the year before Yovel. Inadvisable. But that works as well. And obviously, all the years in between, you could be matzish the field. All this is clear. However, what about the actual Yovel year itself? Now, we just learned the Braisa together. If you go back to the Gemara, where the Gemara started off, and you read the Braisa, I don't think the Braisa could have been any clearer. Right? Even before we start with the upcoming Gemara. I'm rereading the Braisa of the Gemara. Makdishim ben lifnei Yovel ben lacha Yovel v'shnasa Yovel atzma lo yakdish v'yemekdish in a kedusha. The Braisa says that if you're makdish your field in the Yovel year, it's simply not subject to Kedusha. It's kind of hard to debate this point, but not impossible. The Gemara now is going to debate this point. Itmar. Hamakdish adeo b'shnas ha-Yovel atzma, Rav amar Kedusha v'nosin chamishim. So Rav says that the field now has Kedusha. And if you want to redeem it, so you're going to have to pay 50 shkalim. Now, you want to redeem it. I know it's going to cost you a lot of money, but you're going to want to redeem it because what happens when you don't redeem it? So then we read the Pesukim. A consecrated field that goes unredeemed, so it's going to go to the Kohanim. So you're going to want to redeem it and you're going to have to pay 50 shkalim. You're not afforded any kind of prorated rate. Shmuel Amar Einu Kedusha Kol Yikra. Now Shmuel says it does not have any Kedusha whatsoever, meaning it's totally ineffective. Now obviously Shmuel is going to be supported by the Braisa, and the Gemara is going to hit that point just in a moment. Not yet. Maskel Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef challenges as follows: Bishlam elinya mechira de palik shmuel ei derav. So look, in terms of the sale of a field, now we know when it comes to the sale of the field, so we're basically working with the same rules. We don't have the fixed rate of redemption that's specific to being makdish de'achuza, but we're basically working with the same rules. You sell an ancestral property; you're not really selling it; you're leasing it because it's going to come back to you in the Yovel year. Understood. And what happens if you sell a field in the Yovel year itself? So Shmuel and Rav have the same argument in terms of whether the sale works or does not work. And we're going to get to that a little bit later in this perek. But in the meantime, however, what's the Shmuel argument? It's actually very logical. And the Gemara here presents it. Bishlam alinya mechira de palik shmuel de Rav ikal amemar kavachomer ma mechura kvar yotza achshav she'ena mechura eino din shloti makir. Look, Shmuel's argument by mechira goes like this. I sell a property, again, I'm using the word sale, but it's really a lease. I sell a property during the Yovel cycle. And then Yovel comes around. What happens? It comes back to me. So if a land is going to come back to me in Yovel, so doesn't it go without saying that if I even attempt to sell my field in Yovel, the sale doesn't even go through? Okay, good. That's the argument of Shmuel when it comes to sale. And Rav disagrees, and again, we're going to discuss this in greater detail later in the perek. But me, good. That's by Mechira. Can we take the same argument and apply it also to being makdish? It doesn't work exactly the same. So meanwhile, what happens to feel that you are makdish that goes unredeemed? It doesn't come back to you, rather it goes to the Kohanim. And when it goes to the Kohanim, so the Kohanim don't even get it for free, they have to pay for it. Divrei Rav Yehuda, that's Rav Yehuda's position. We will explain Rabbi Yehuda's position in greater detail later in the parak. But meanwhile, what you see over here is that the argument of Shmuel that is very clear and logical as it relates to Mechira simply doesn't work when it comes to being Makdish a field. Now, the Gemara says, okay, but even though you cited a position, you cited Rabbi Yehuda's position. Let's go to Rabbi Shimon, which we haven't seen yet, but we're going to see right now. Shmuel to Rabbi Shimon Sfirle. Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon. Damar nechnasim velo nosnim. Shmuel's position is that what happens is that the Kohanim come and assume ownership, and they don't have to pay for it. So what you see now is that what happens in the Shemitah year is there an automatic return. It just happens to be that when you're makdish the field, so the return doesn't go to you, the return goes to the Kohanim, but there's an automatic return. So now we could use the Kal V'Chomer of Shmuel. If during the Shemitah year, it comes automatically back to you. So the same thing is true regarding when you're Makdish a field, it automatically comes back. The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't come back to you. It goes to the Kohanim, but there is an automatic return. Now, Rav Savar, so Rav says, okay, but I can't ignore those last two words, which I kind of just muttered under my breath, which is it doesn't come back to you. So, sof lebalim, mika hadri lekohanim hu denafka. The Kohanim yishochen gavol kazachu. So what Rav's counter-argument is going to be is, okay, but it doesn't go to you, it goes to the Kohanim. And don't call that an automatic return. You know what that is? Really, the land goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is he gives it to the Kohanim. So the argument that you had by Mechira, Rav says to Shmuel, oh, fine, I'll work with you in terms of your argument of Mechira. And your argument is very good. If land returns to its owner in Yovel, certainly land can't be sold in the Yovel year. Good. By sale, that's a sound argument. But we don't have the same argument by being Makdish. And even if I subscribe to Rabbi Shimon's position, where it automatically goes to the Kohanim, good, but that's not you, that's the Kohanim. And even as the Kohanim receiving it, it's not the Kohanim receiving it, it's really HaKadosh Baruch Hu receiving it. And the Kohanim are getting it, Mishochan Gavoa. Okay, so.
So it never came back.
It never came back. It never came back. My time the Rav. The Gemara now wants to know, what is the reason for the position of Rav? It's interesting because the Gemara just gave arguments, but in terms of Drasha. So again, we have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. If I am Makdish a field in the Yovel year, is that Hekdish effective? And do I have to redeem it? So Rav says yes. And you have to redeem it at 50 shekel. You're not given the prorated rate. And according to Shmuel, so you it's not even Hekdish. It doesn't belong to Hekdish. It was totally ineffective. What is the reason behind Rav? My time at the Rav, I'm a Krav, im Mishnas HaYovel. Vishnas HaYovel Bechlal. So the Torah says that when can you be Makdish a field? Im Mishnas HaYovel, which includes Shnas HaYovel. Meaning, Shnas HaYovel is one of the years in which it could be Makdish. Okay. Shmuel miksiv im Bishnas HaYovel. Now, Shmuel says, you got to read the Pasuk carefully with the correct prefix. The Pasuk does not say Bishnas HaYovel. The Pasuk says, Mi Shnas HaYovel ksiv. From the Yovel year. Mishnas HaAchar HaYovel. And so that means to say that the first time that it is a recognized consecration of the property, it's only the year after the Yovel, not during the Yovel year. Now, Bishlam Rav Haina Dichsiv Mishnas HaYovel V'Imachar HaYovel. Now, actually, the simple pshat in the Pesukim favor Rav. I know that sounds strange because Shmuel just gave such a lucid argument. But meanwhile, if you read the Pesukim actually read very well according to Rav. Once again, I'm back in the Chumash. The Pasuk and Pasuk Yitzayin, Im Mishnas HaYovel Yakdish HaDeo Kerkecha Yakum. Now, let's learn like Rav. That pasuk is talking about the Yovel year. Why? Because contrast that with the next pasuk. Vim acher hayovel yakdish. And if after the Yovel you're going to be makdish, so that's the year after the Yovel year. So the truth of the matter is that the pasukim read actually beautifully according to Rav. So l'shmol my achar hayovel. So what is Shmuel going to do with that pasuk yud ches? So the Gemara's response, achar, achar. What Shmuel's going to do is as follows. Pasuk yud zayin imishnas hayovel, that's talking about the year after Yovel. In fact, the prefix of mi, mishnas hayovel, after the Yovel year. The next pasuk is after, the second year after the Yovel year. And why is there a difference? It's very simple. Because if you're makdish land in the first year of the Yovel cycle, so that means that you're going to be paying the full amount of 50. Anytime you're going to be makdish any year after that, so then now it gets prorated. That's gira'on. That's how Shmuel's going to understand the pesukim. Good. So we have a basic machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. If I'm makdish a property in the Yovel year, is the hektish recognized? Do I have to redeem it? Rav says yes, Shmuel says no. And we read the psukim, like Rav, like Shmuel, it could go either way. Meitzvah, the Gemara is going to challenge based on a braisa. And here we go now. The braisa that started off our discussion in the Gemara, and the braisa in its simplicity reads exactly like Shmuel. Makdish melifnei Yovel ben lachar Yovel vishnasa Yovel asma lo yaktish v'mikdish en kedusha. It's hard to be any clearer. It's really difficult. The Braisa reads like Shmuel. So if you're Rav, you know the Braisa. What are you going to say? Amalcha Rav ain't a kedusha bigura v'kedusha v'nosin chamishim. So Rav will tell you as follows. Yeah, you know what the Braisa means? It means as follows. Even though the Braisa says ain't a kedusha, what the Braisa does not mean that there's no kedusha. There is kedusha. What the Braisa means is it's not subject to the Kedusha of being Makdishit in the Yovel cycle. Where there, it is going to be Kadosh, and if you want to redeem it, you pay the prorated rate. If you're makdashit in the Shemitah, in the Yovel year, I was a mistake. I was going to say Shemitah. If you're makdashit in the Yovel year, so now it's not subject to Giron, you're paying the full 50. So Michlal, the Lufnea Yovel, Kedusha Ligal, Begirua. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. According to Rav, is that true for every year? It's going to get prorated other than the Yovel year? We know better. We've learned together that anytime you're makdash the field within 2 years before Yovel, you're not afforded the prorated rate. We learned in the beginning of the parak that both Rav and Shmuel agree that if you're makdish a land within 2 years before the Yovel cycle, so you're going to have to redeem it and at the non-prorated rate of 50 shkalim. So this pshat of Rav, the only time that you're going to be paying the non-prorated rate is when you're makdish in the Yovel year. It's not true. If you're makdashit within 2 years, you're also paying at this non-prorated rate. Amlecha Rav, hamani rabbanan hi, va'ane da'amre kerebi. So the Gemara says, well, here's the disconnect. Here's the divide. That is going like the Chachamim and I hold like Rebbe. Da'amar rishon rishon bechlal shvi shvi bechlal. Now this is a discussion that we had just short a week ago in the Daf. And you remember, the discussion goes like this. It's basically the machlokus of ad va'ad bechlal, Ad velo ad bechlal. Pesach, what does the Torah say? From day 1 to day 7, you're going to celebrate Pesach. Now, the Torah also happens to give dates. So we really don't have ambiguity in terms of when Pesach begins and when Pesach ends. But if the Torah would not have given us dates, and the Torah just simply says, you're going to be celebrating Pesach from day 1 till day 7, so what would that mean? So Rebbe is of the position that it is inclusive. It means from day 1, meaning including day 1, till day 7, including day 7. That's Shita's Rebbe. The Shita of the Chachamim, which is such an interesting Shita, is that had the Torah not given us calendaric dates, we would have said, when is Pesach? Day 2 through day 6. Not including 1 and 7. What exactly would that look like? It's kind of hard to imagine. It comes out that by Pesach there is no ambiguity because the Torah gives us dates. But still, fundamentally, principally, the Chachamim say ad velo ad bechlal. So now, let's take that machlokas and let's apply it over here to Yovel and being makdish. So what Rav is going to say in his defense is as follows. Look, it's true, there's a brisa. And the brisa says that Yovel is not going to be subject to Kedusha. That there is a brisa like that. That brisa subscribes to the Chachamim. I don't subscribe to the Chachamim. I subscribe to Rebbe. In other words, whenever the Torah gives us a range, it means including as well. Ad va'ad bechlal. Hachanami bishnas ha'yovel bechlal. When the Torah says from Yovel, it means and including the Yovel year. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, so now we're basically saying that Rebbe may disagree with the brisa, but the brisa is really contingent on the machlokas of Rebbe and the Chachamim regarding whether or not we say ad v'ad bechlal or lo ad v'lo ad bechlal. And now it means as follows. So let's take a look now at our Yovel cycle. Yovel cycle is 50 years. And I know we can poke at that a little, and we will in just a moment. But the Yovel cycle is 50 years. And so that means that according to Rav, who subscribes to Rebbe, so that means ad v'ad bechlal. It goes from 50, including 50, or to right. It goes from year 1 of the Yovel cycle all the way to 50. And ad v'ad bechlal. And that's why Rebbe's of the position that if you're makdish the field in the Yovel year, that is now considered Kedusha. It's Kadosh. Okay, good. Now the Gemara says, if this is true, so now, I k'Rebbe pundayon mayavidate. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So now we have, according to Rav, who subscribes to Rebbe, who says ad v'ad bechlal, so how many years now of prorating are we looking at? Previously, we were saying 49, because previously we assumed that the Yovel year is not included. According to Rebbe, the Yovel year is included. So now in terms of a cycle, so how many years of prorating do we have? We have 50 years of prorating. If we have 50 years of prorating, and the maximum is 50 shkalim, so now the math gets a lot easier. Now it's 50 shkalim divided by 50 years, so it's going to be 1 shekel per year. And so now, if we're going to be paying on a prorated rate, which if you are makdish any year during the Yovel cycle, you're going to be paying at a prorated rate, so it's going to be one shekel per year. Well, now the Gemara says, wait 1 second. So according to you, Rav, who holds like Rebbe, who says Arvad Bechlal, so the prorated rate is not shekel pindayon, it's one shekel. V'chitei maleislei, so the Gemara says, okay, and maybe that's just correct. Maybe our math is good. V'atzanan, the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is the Mishnah coming up. The Mishnah coming up teaches us, Hikdish Shtayim V'Shalosh Shanim Lefnei Ayovel, Rebbe Omer, Omer Ani, Nosin Selo Upundayon. So Rebbe clearly says it's Selo Upundayon. So now our numbers are just simply not working. There's no agreement. Because on one hand, Rebbe's making the argument, Rav is arguing on behalf of Rebbe, Advad Bechlal, which includes the Yovel year. So it's a 50-year cycle. We know the maximum is 50 shkalim. If we're prorating, it's 50 shkalim divided by 50 years, that's one shekel. So it should be that the prorated rate is one shekel per year. Meanwhile, the Mishnah clearly tells us that according to Rebbe, it's shekel pundayon. So how does that work? So the Gemara says, now we can finally throw in one more variable. And that is Rebbe ki Rebbe Yehuda Sfirilei. Now, how many years is the Yovel cycle? So I'll say 50. But that's Shita's Chachamim. Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, which we already saw earlier in the Masechta, is that it's 49 years. Meaning, he doesn't hold of a Yovel year? No, he does hold of a Yovel year. The Yovel year is double dipping. It both represents the 50th year of this cycle, and it also represents year one of the upcoming cycle. So that means that according to Rebbe Yehuda, Yovel is, even in the Yovel cycle, Yovel's 50 is year 50, but the Yovel cycle is 49 years. So now it all works. When you say the first year, just to be clear.
If it's 49, it's double dipping, right?
Where's the double dipping? So if you're makdish it in the Yovel, according to Rebbe, if you're makdish it in the Yovel year, you now have 49 years until the next Yovel. So now you're going to be prorating it based on those 49 years. Ad bechlal, that's true. But that also means, though, that we're working with Shitas Rebbe Yehuda, where the next Yovel is coming up 49 years from now, not 50 years from now. So Rebbe ki Rebbe Yehuda Sfirilei, da amar shnas chamishim ola lekan lekan. So now what it means is as follows. Rebbe holds ad bechlal. Rebbe's also of the position that he subscribes to Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe also is of the opinion that a prorated year is going to come out to shekel pindayon. It works. Now it works when you crunch all those numbers together. Because now the cycle is going to be 49 years. Now, even though we're including year 1 and we're including year 49, but that's true. But at the same time, however, with a maximum of 50 and prorating and dividing that number by 49, we come out to shekel pundayon. Tell me the problem after. Let me first present it as clearly as I can. L'shmul lemalei Rebbe k'rabbanan svirlei. Now, if you're Shmuel, you're saying lo ad v'lo ad bechlal. It is not inclusive. Now, Shmuel also agrees there's nothing to agree with. Rebbe tells us that the prorated rate is shekel pundayon per year. Now, if Shmuel's of the position that it's up to but not including, and Shmuel is of the opinion, and we know this because he said so, that if I'm makdish the field during the Yovel year, it simply doesn't count. So now, how do we prorate the years? The Yovel year doesn't count, so that means to say that we're going to have to deduct the Yovel year from prorating. Now, if we subscribe to Rebbe Yehuda, that's a 49-year cycle, and I don't count the Yovel year, how many years does that give us? It only gives us 48 years. So that now becomes a problem because taking 50 divided by 48, I now am going to be prorated to the point where it's going to be shekel and 2 pundayon per year, if you're following. So what the Gemara says is that in order to get agreement for Shmuel, Rebbe's going to have to subscribe to the sheet of the Chachamim, that we're working with a 50-year cycle. The Yovel year doesn't count, bringing us down to 49. 50 shkalim divided by 49 years, that gets us to shekel pindayon. And the Gemara says that's the correct math. So Rebbe holds like the Chachamim according to Shmuel. Okay, let me just quickly recap, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow from here. What we have in our Gemara is, we finished off the sixth parak of the Masechta. We talked about what is protected from seizure, what's not protected from seizure. We also talked about what, and when a person is makdish, what's included in that, what's not included in that. Various arguments that you can make regarding what should be protected from seizure in terms of tools of the trade. Machlokas Tanakama, Rabbi Eliezer, regarding what files under craftsman tools versus what files under your assets. Assets are subject to seizure, your tools are not. Okay. Anyway, that was the end of the sixth parak. The beginning of the seventh parak, we opened up the discussion this morning regarding the understanding of steachuza. A person wants to be makdish, he wants to consecrate a steachuza. So how does he redeem it? And admittedly, it does get a little bit complicated because there are a number of variables to take into consideration. In the meanwhile, however, if I could just say it succinctly. If you're makdish the field at the beginning of the Yovel cycle, so there the Torah says that when you're redeeming it, you're going to be redeeming it at that point at maximum value. What is maximum value? It's a fixed value. It's not a market value. The fixed value of 50 shkalim per chomer sa'orim, the amount of 30 sa' of barley, which comes out to 75,000 square amas. That is the fixed rate of redemption. And that is when you are looking at the maximum number of years between the Yovel cycle and the upcoming Yovel cycle, which is going to be, now here's where it gets a little bit tricky. Now, it could be 49 years, it could be 50 years, it depends. It depends on, number one, can you be makdish in the Yovel year itself? So this is a machlokas amarayim between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says yes, Shmuel says no. What is that machlokas going to be predicated on? So as we learned in today's daf, it's predicated on when the Torah gives the range, do we include the edges of the range, or are we only talking about that which is in the range? Rav subscribes to Rebbe, which is ad v'ad bechlal. Shmuel subscribes to Chachamim, ad v'lo ad bechlal. Good. It also now is going to be dependent on what is the range of Yovel. Yovel could be 49 years, Yovel could be 50 years. How could Yovel be 49 years? Because even though Yovel is the 50th year, but we also have a basic machlokas between the Tanaim, whether or not we count that as its own independent year, that Shitas Chachamim, or do we go like the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda, where it's Ola Lekan Ulekan. It is both the 50th year of the previous cycle and the first year of the upcoming cycle. So that means according to Rebbe Yehuda, it's now going to be a total 49 years. We do know that according to Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, the prorated rate per year is one shekel and one pundayon. We do know that. We also know that how to explain Rebbe in terms of arriving at that? So that is going to just simply be based on the variables of whether the Yovel year is included and how many years do we have from one Yovel to the next. And that math we did at the end. One more point I'd like to go over before we finish with today's daf. At the end of the Mishnah, so I read it and I did an awful job translating it. So let's go back and let's read those last lines of the Mishnah again. Pachus Mishana Achas, Ein Mechashin Chadashin LeHektish, Ava Hektish Mechashin Chadashin. Months don't count, months count. What? So we're going to see this tomorrow, but I might as well say it now, as I have my head wrapped around it right now, and so now's a good time to say it. When we say that months don't count, we mean to say as follows. You're going to be paying based on the number of years that are left until the upcoming Yovel. If there are 30 years left, so then they're going to be paying 30 prorated years of shekel and pundayon per year in order to redeem your field. Mm-hmm. Let's say there are 30 years left, but in other words, but we're now, we're in, let's say, year 31 going towards Yovel. So in other words, we are half of the year into year 31, half the year is left of 31. So can I say basically, look, we're going to prorate. So can I take 31 and can I divide in half? To that, the Mishnah says no. If you're in 31, year 31 going towards Yovel, that year 31 now counts as a prorated year. And you can't deduct months, meaning it's going to be full years, period. Okay, that's the first point of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah says, but when it comes to Hekdesh, Ein, right, Aval Hekdesh Mechashiv Chadashim, but the Hekdesh can be Mechashiv Chadashim. What does that mean? It means as follows. Let's say you were Makdish a year and a half left before the Yovel. Now, what did we learn in the Mishnah and in the beginning of the Gemara? That if there's anything less than 2 years up until Yovel, so it's no longer prorated redemption, you're going to be paying the full amount. So can't you make the argument to Hekdesh, wait 1 second, a year and a half, there's no such thing as halves. So let's bump it up to two.
Right.
Oh, okay, good, we're good, right? I wish that's what the Mishnah says at the end. Hekdesh can be Mechashiv Chadashim. To Hekdesh benefit, Hekdesh can say to you, no, it's not 2 years, it's a year and a half. Well, wait 1 second. If there were three and a half years, you'd call that four. Hekdesh would be like, yeah, that's right, that's correct. That's right. Meaning the month can work in either favor towards the Beis HaMikdash, either to bump it up for an extra prorated year or to move it down so that they receive the full 50, right? That's what the Mishnah is teaching us at the end.